Congratulations, boy.
Many gave their lives that we might stand here once again, united in the government of a lawful republic.
Gaius Octavian was henceforth to be regarded, for all intents and purposes, as my lawful son.
Gaius Octavian Caesar.
Oh, hey, Ray.
Hey, Cam, how's it going?
Oh, fantastic.
Good. I couldn't be better.
Feeling so good.
Actually, I could be better. I could be dead. That would really
Welcome to the Life of Augustus, episode 12, I think.
In the slow lane.
Yeah, live from Las Vegas. Yes. Hungover, sleep deprived. We had our ass kicked.
Yes.
We've been partying for 2 days, yes. working hard and partying.
Exactly.
And we're both feeling like shit.
Exactly. So, some stuff's going to happen to Augustus. We really don't give a.
I want to thank a couple of people. Peter Cabral, photographer based in Brisbane, did some photos of Chrissy and the family and I before we went away. Facebook.com/ Peter Cabral Photography. That's Cabral, C-A-B-R-A-L.
That's how to spell it.
Check out Peter's stuff. If you're in Brisbane, you want some photos done, check him out.
Yeah.
He's very, very good. Very, very good. We're very happy with the work that he did. Nice. We gave one of them as a Christmas present to my mother-in-law. Life of Simon Bolivar is a podcast done by one of our listeners, Sherlock Ortiz.
Love that name.
I think Sherlock is a young fella.
Yeah.
Might be 17 or 18 or something like that, yeah. I think, Sherlock. But he's doing a very good podcast on the Latin American revolutionary Simón Bolívar.
Cool.
You can find that at Detective News. No. It's not Detective News.
No, not that.
It's Detective WS. Sorry, my eyes aren't focusing properly.
He's only using one of them.
.com/ Life of Simón Bolívar.
Nice.
I've had a listen to one or two episodes. Very good stuff. He's doing a great job.
Nice.
How much, Ray,
yes,
do you think Octavian participated or got a thrill out of the massacres of the prescriptions?
Yeah, everything I've been able to read, they are all over the place, and so am I. I'm just like, I mean, was it politically necessary? Was he just an insensitive young guy, as most young guys are? Did he have a grudge after, you know, his uncle, or not uncle, after Caesar being killed? So you would really just like, again, to get a time machine and go back. How much of it did he participate in? How much did he enjoy it? Did he enjoy it at all? Did he maybe throw up after your first couple killings but get used to it? Who knows? But it was something that needed to be done. And how could you not be wary, especially what after happened to Caesar? No matter what you feel or how much you like it, these are things got to be done because these guys are out to kill you.
Yeah, but there's a big difference between doing it because it needs to be done. It's a practical, pragmatic initiative, and in getting a thrill out of it.
Yeah.
Like it seems from the stories we have, if they are true, of, Antony's enjoyment with, having Pompey's head on the dining table and Fulvia pulling Cicero's head and Cicero's tongue out and sticking pins in it.
Yeah.
I mean, they were getting a thrill out of at least some of the executions. Fulvia nailing the head of her neighbor to the front door of the house he wouldn't sell her previously.
Exactly. Well, how about this? If this is true about Augustus, then he obviously mellowed or tempered himself with time. And that's one of the amazing things I love about Octavian. He literally improved himself as he went along. He was one of the few people who actually did that in history. But he had a lot of failings. He had a lot of lack of experience with things. He's not a military general. He's not a great politician. But he's going to learn along the way. And if he is a bloodthirsty, callow youth, then he certainly matured as time went on. For the great fortune of Rome, anyway.
But, you know, everything that we've read about Octavian up until this point, he doesn't seem like a crazy motherfucker.
Yeah, I'm not getting any extremism.
Yeah.
So I'm not picking up on that.
Antony, on the other hand.
Yeah, fucking crazy.
We know he's a fucking crazy dude, right?
Yeah.
Hey, look at me. I've got a chariot being pulled by lions.
That's right. And I'm going to throw up in public and I'm dating hookers and prostitutes.
And even when Caesar was still alive and Antony was looking after Rome, he had 800 guys beat up because they were protesting.
That's right.
Lack of debt relief or something.
Yeah.
You know, he's a fucking wild man, wild card, hothead, Sonny Corleone type of hothead, whereas Octavian's more than Michael Corleone. He's calm, doing what needs to be done, but not getting too emotional about it.
Well, I could just see Mark Anthony going, "We've got to kill this guy," and he's towering over Octavius, and Octavius is probably like, "Okay." You know, I mean, who knows? Who knows? But I can certainly see him being browbeaten.
And he's only 20, so it's not like he's had enough time to build a big list of enemies.
Yeah, who's he pissed? Pissed at him?
Well, he obviously hates the assassins of Caesar and the people that supported after the event, Caesar's assassination, like Cicero.
Right.
But, he's not going to have the sort of deep, deep resentments and enemies that Antony has, who's been around a lot longer.
He's earned a lot.
And Lepidus too. I mean, we don't really know of any stories of Lepidus being a psychopath. Anyway, you know, whether Antony, Octavian or Lepidus got a thrill out of the executions or not, they definitely all participated in it. They supported it. It was something, as you say, they felt, rightly or wrongly, had to be done.
Exactly.
We've got to get rid of all of our enemies.
Yeah.
And anyone who's got a lot of money, even if they're not our enemies.
That's right.
Death
through riches.
Now, you know, we talked briefly about this in the last show, but they've now got something like 40 legions between them.
Damn, yeah.
Who require bonuses.
Yes.
They need hard currency to pay them.
Right.
And so a lot of people that ended up on the prescriptions list were just wealthy and there was no good reason keeping them alive.
Yeah. And I guess I shouldn't have been surprised by this, but some people were proscribed. They were able to get away and they really weren't pursued with any enthusiasm because they left behind what the triumvirate was really after, all their possessions. And so I would love to know the truth about, did Fulvia really take bribes to get people either taken off the list or put back on? Did Mark Antony really pardon some woman or her husband because she slept with him? I mean, I could totally see that. But at the end of the day, this is just a money-making scheme because if you don't pay the soldiers, they're either going to turn against you or the very least turn away from you. And their power base is nothing more than all these organized men with weapons.
Yeah. So it's not like they're going after the rich people just to line their own pockets. They're going after them so they can meet their commitments to their soldiers because, as you say, that's their power base.
Yeah.
There are stories in the histories that Octavian and Antony were accused of killing people simply to get their hands on their art collections.
Damn.
But that may be just later propaganda. We don't know.
Yeah.
Antony also ordered the death of Verres, a provincial governor of Sicily who had been in exile since Cicero prosecuted him in 70 BCE.
Yeah.
Now, this Verres was a nasty piece of work in his own right. During the time of the Third Servile War, 73 to 71 BCE, this was the war against Spartacus and the slave revolt.
Mm-hmm.
Verres had used the emergency in order to raise cash, and he would apparently, one of the things he'd do, he would pick key slaves of wealthy landowners in his region, charge them with plotting to join Spartacus's revolt, or just planning to cause trouble, sedition in the local province. And then he would sentence the slave to death by execution, but would leave a very broad hint that a sizable bribe from the slave's owner could expunge the charge and save their life. Sometimes he would even name non-existent slaves.
Jim Bob.
You got a slave called Jim Bob.
I know you do.
And he's plotting a rebellion.
Yeah.
And the owner is actively hiding him.
Absolutely.
Owner's like, what the fuck are you talking about? I don't have a Jim Bob. Oh, yes, you do.
Yes, you do.
And, of course, you know, he would say, you know, produce the slave or you end up on the list.
That's right.
And they're like, there is no slave. Oh, that's what you would say. They all say that. Yeah. So he would put the owner of the imagined slave into prison until he got paid a bribe.
And hold out his hand. What are we going to do about this? What are we going
to
do?
He killed for his art collection and wealth too, apparently.
Oh.
So, you know, Antony put him on the list. Yeah. So there you go. That's a bit of karma for Verres.
So what you're going to tell us, and yeah, there were some other stories about, you know, people putting, getting people put on the prescription list just for revenge, just to get at someone, or maybe you wanted to marry that spouse or whatever, get their property. But yeah, it kind of got out of control because it was about money. It wasn't about also just getting rid of the enemies of the state. But here's the part that I liked. The people are getting nervous because slaves are now killing their masters. They are literally turning society on its head. So if a slave killed someone, like we said last time, they'd get a bonus. They'd produce the head, get a bonus, and they get their freedom. But if the slave bragged too much about it, made too much of a show about it, or continued to pursue maybe other family members, that slave would either be killed or re-enslaved. So just so the triumvirs could say, yes, slaves are able to do this, but if, you know, we're not going to let things get out of hand because we need stability. We need economic stability, but we also need social stability. So if the slaves were smart, they just did it on the down low and got the hell out of there. But if they made too much of it, they would find themselves back as a slave.
In one case, apparently, Antony parted some guy because the guy's wife agreed to fuck him.
Right. Yeah. I have to go along with that. I don't have any problem with that. I don't do. Yeah.
Classy.
Yeah.
Classy dude.
I say that knowing my wife doesn't listen to this.
So as we've suggested, some of the people on the list just got the fuck out of Italy. Triumvirs didn't really care. They just take their property anyway.
Yeah.
Some of the people who escaped, though, did return to Italy many years later, and there were lots of stories to be told about heroic protection and treacherous betrayals by their families, friends, and slaves. Children were generally exempt from the prescription list unless they had money.
Oh, you're a rich 7-year-old.
Yeah, if you've inherited, if your dad's dead and you've inherited all of his wealth, then you got to go. Yeah. There's a story where a boy was killed on his way to school.
Yes.
There's another story where a boy was added to the list as he was going through the ceremony to make him a man, receiving their toga virilis.
Right.
Appian writes, Attilius, who was just assuming the virile toga, went, as was customary, with a procession of friends to sacrifice in the temples.
Damn.
His name being put on the prescription list unexpectedly, his friends and servants ran away.
Good move.
Left alone and bereft of his brilliant escort, he went to his mother. She was afraid to receive him. As he did not consider it safe to ask help from anybody else after his mother had failed him, he fled to a mountain. Hunger drove him down to the plain, where he was captured by a robber and committed to a workhouse. The delicate boy, unable to endure the toil, escaped to the high road with his fetters, revealing himself to some passing centurions and was killed.
Yes. Hey, can you help me? No, but I can help myself. Yeah, so fucked up in the extreme. So now what you're going to tell us is that the three tribe raised all the money that they ever needed and everybody lived happily ever after.
Not so fast. But before we get to that, I want to talk about some more stories. Sure. So there's a story of a wife who begged to be killed alongside of her husband, who she confessed to hiding.
My wife better do that.
They killed her husband, and she said, well, I was hiding him, kill me too. And they went, nah. So she went to Antony and said, you've got to kill me. I hid my husband, you got to kill him. They went, nah. But yes, and they're like, look, sorry, lady, we just don't have time to kill you today.
We're busy right now.
So she starved herself to death.
Shit.
Because she didn't want to live without her husband. That's what I hope Chrissy will do when I die.
Yeah.
There are no specific stories, though, of wives being killed for hiding their husbands.
Right.
Even though that, according to the prescription decree, was supposed to happen. There's no stories of that actually happening. It was all talk.
Yeah, this was truly a money-making scheme with some blood mixed in.
Which was a little bit embarrassing for the wives that gave their husbands up, and they were like, well, if I hide you, then we both die, so that's not good. You know, kids will be orphans.
Exactly.
Let me just give you up, and yes, I will get the money. I'll get the 25,000 drachmas or whatever, but come on, I mean, I'm just making the practical decision here.
For the good of the family.
And then they found out that none of the wives were punished for hiding husbands. They're like, oh.
Nope.
One tale claimed that a woman arranged to have her husband added to the list.
Damn.
Then locked him in the house until the soldiers came.
Get the fuck out of here.
And then quickly married her lover within hours of her husband's execution.
Tacky. That's tacky.
Yeah.
You want to know what I did when we were walking last night? Those guys kept shoving cards in our hands.
Yes.
There were a lot of naked women on those cards. I was pretty excited about that. I get to my hotel room. I'm about to slip my key in. I go through all my pockets, literally throw it down on the floor, all those cards they handed, and then I walked into the room with a clear conscience because I don't want my wife pulling some shit like this if the opportunity ever comes up.
Yeah.
I should have thrown him in front of the neighbor's door. But anyway.
There's another story of a wife who hid her husband, helped him to escape, and eventually convinced Octavian to grant him a pardon. So some wives are bitches.
Yeah. Some are saints.
And some are saints.
Yeah.
Which must be time for a song.
Some are bitches, some are saints. Some are witches, some ain't.
Not that song.
Women respect money, according to John.
We haven't heard this one for a while.
I'm gonna cry.
Bitches ain't shit. Bitches ain't shit. Bitches ain't shit, but hoes and tricks. Lick on the nuts and suck the dick. Just get the fuck out after you're done. And I hops in my ride to make a quick run. I used to know a bitch named Derek, right? We used to roll around and fuck the hoes at night. Tighter than a motherfucking gangster beats. And we was ballin' on the motherfucking Compton streets. Peep that sheet got deep and it was on. Number one song after number one song. Long as my motherfucking pockets was fat. Didn't give a fuck where the bitch was at. She was hanging with a white bitch doing the shit she do. Sucking on his dick just to get a buck or two. And the ends that she got meant nothing. But now she's suing cause the shit that she be doing ain't shit. Bitches can't hang with the streets. She found herself short. Now she's taking me to court. That's real conversation for your ass. I once had a bitch named Mandy May. I used to be up in them guts like every day. The pussy was bomb, had a nigger on strong. I was in love like a motherfucker licking the proton. Homies used to tell me that she was no good. That I'm a maniac in black, Mr. Snoop Eastwood. So I figured nigger wouldn't trip with mine. Guess what? Got gaffled by one time. Back in the motherfucking county jail. 6 months on my chest, now it's time to bail. I gets released on a hot sunny day. My nigga DOC and my homie Dr. Dre. Scooped in a coupe, Snoop, we got the news. Your girl was tricking while you was draped in the county blues. Ain't happened out a second already, I got to do some motherfucking chin check-in. Block as we groove down the block, see my girl's house straight past the block. Kick in the door and I look on the floor. It's my little cousin Daz and he's fucking my hoe. I'm cut my shit. I'm heartbroken, but I'm still locked.
Man, fuck that. 3, 2.
and shit buttholes and tricks. Lick all these nuts and suck the dick. Get the fuck out after you're done. And I hops in my ride to make a quick run. I used to know a bitch named Eric Wright. We used to roll around and fuck the hoes at night. Tighter than a motherfucking gangster beats. And we was balling on the motherfucking Compton streets.
That just sums up our time in Vegas.
It does. It really does. I've never seen so much leather and chains and but done artfully with implants.
That was funny shit.
Yeah.
Bitches. Appian has more stories. Some died defending themselves against their slayers. Others made no resistance, considering the assailants not to blame. Some starved or hanged or drowned themselves or flung themselves from their roofs or into the fire. Some offered themselves to the murderers or sent for them when they delayed. Others concealed themselves and made abject entreaties or dodged or tried to buy themselves off. Some were killed by mistake or by private malice, contrary to the intention of the triumvirs. It was evidence that a corpse was not one of the proscribed if the head was still attached to it, for the heads of the proscribed were displayed on the rostra in the forum, where it was necessary to bring them in order to get the rewards. Equally conspicuous were the fidelity and courage of others, of wives, of children, of brothers, of slaves, who rescued the proscribed or planned for them in various ways and died with them. Fuck. When they prescribed blah blah blah. Let me go. Where and die with them when they did not succeed in their designs.
Mm-hmm.
Some even killed themselves on the bodies of the slain. Statius, the Samnite, who had had great influence with the Samnites during the social war, and who had been raised to the rank of a Roman senator for his noble deeds, his wealth and his lineage, and who was now 80 years of age, was proscribed on account of his riches. He threw open his house to the people and to his own slaves to carry away whatever they pleased.
Nice.
He also scattered his property around with his own hand. When at last the house was empty, he closed the doors, set fire to it, and perished. And the fire spread to many other parts of the city.
Oh, my God.
Capito, through his half-open door, for a long time resisted those who had been sent against him, killing them one by one, because he was a motherfucking badass.
That's right. Boom.
Finally, he was overpowered by numbers and slain after killing single-handed many of his assailants.
That's how you do it.
Hold on. I got to send a text message to David Markham.
Sir David.
Sir David. You keep talking.
Okay. Where was I? Let's see here. Yeah, so again, it was a very tricky thing because you need to do whatever you can do to get all the money, but you can't have society totally break down. So it was a fine point, but again, it was all about the money at the end of the day. If somebody escaped, you know, good for them. They could start their life over. Just don't come back to Rome anytime soon. But what I thought was amazing was, and they should have thought this through. This is what I don't get. So they grab all these properties and they're going to auction them off.
Wait. I'm not.
Are you still doing stories?
I'm still doing stories. I have no problem with stories.
I have no problem.
You just fucking want to get through. You want to just talk about money. It's all it is with you. Money. There's another story of Octavian granting a reprieve. A woman managed to hide her husband in her large chest. In a large chest.
Ba-dum-bum.
He was brought into Octavian's presence while Octavian was presiding over public games.
Right.
The husband was revealed, and the crowd was so impressed with her balls and her loyalty that Octavian was forced to grant him a pardon.
The power of public opinion.
Yeah, that's a fucking great story, right?
Yeah.
There were also stories of slaves who betrayed their masters to get the reward but then made so much of a big public display about it. Hey, look at my Ferrari, bitches. Right. That they were either executed or re-enslaved to make sure the social order wasn't disturbed too much.
That's right.
So let that be a lesson to any slaves out there listening. If you betray your master for a reward, shut the fuck up about it.
do what you got to do and disappear.
Take the money, quietly disappear, live it up large somewhere else. Just don't do it where you betrayed your master.
How many slaves do you think are listening to this? I'm just curious.
Well, you know.
Because slavery does exist.
It does exist.
And it's sad, but it's absolutely true.
I'm sure they're working in their slave dens right now, listening to this.
And well, if you're
dreaming of a revolution.
If you're a master and you employ 50 slaves and they're making stuff, but you pipe in podcasts, you're a pretty nice master.
Well, it's, you know, it's about keeping the peace, really.
Exactly.
You know?
Okay. Distraction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Appian writes, while these events were taking place, Lepidus enjoyed a triumph for his exploits in Spain, and an edict was displayed in the following terms. In God's name, let it be proclaimed to all men and women that they celebrate this day with sacrifices and feasting. Whoever shall fail to do so shall be put on the list of the proscribed.
Damn, they take that shit seriously, don't they?
Everybody have a good time. Right. If you're not having a good time, you're on the list. If you say I'm a dick for saying what I just said, you're on the list.
Party or I will kill you.
Now, by the way, I posted some questions on Facebook about this. In the translation of Appian that I've got, it says that the edict said in God's name. And I said, well, obviously, the concept of a singular God they wouldn't have had back then.
So who do they mean?
Yeah. What do they mean? Who do they mean? And I want to thank Nick, the Greek. Nick is Nick Constantinogadoudis.
Mm-hmm. Go with the first one.
Nick, I'm looking for Nick's name in Facebook now. Okay. I can't find it. But Nick's one of our listeners. He's a Greek. I think he speaks ancient Greek.
Cool.
Nick jumped on and said that in the original Greek of that, it's basically would translate in fortune's name.
Ah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
In the name of fortune, let it be said. But, you know, translators later on in the Christian era translated it as in God's name, but it's really in the name of fortune.
Bullcrap. Gotcha.
Let's talk about money.
Yeah. So for all their hard work in killing people, and they did, you know, they worked hard at it, they weren't raising as much money as either they thought they would or they should. Because, and again, I don't get this. It doesn't make sense. They should have thought this through. They take Cam. They kill him. They put his property up for sale. I'm a rich guy. I mean, yeah, I'll buy it. I mean, yeah, I've got tons of cash. I'd love to buy that. I've always wanted that house. Why in the fuck would I say anything like, yes, I would love to buy it. I have tons of cash. So people, these houses were being low bidded. People did not want to show their wealth, or they might have ended up on the list. But between people trying to hide their wealth and not bidding too high, even though they were putting a lot of property on the market, it was not bringing a lot of money into the coffers. And as we said, they had promised their soldiers pay and bonuses, and because that was the power base. So they were, you know, kind of stressing out, trying to raise all the money for these massive number of legions.
Yeah. So that was a bit of a flaw in the old strategy.
Yeah.
Declare that we're going to kill rich people and then invite rich people to come to an auction and show how rich they are. Whoops. What the fuck?
See, a chess player would have thought that.
Yeah. Now, I've got some interesting numbers I got out of somewhere here. Now, in the prescriptions of our old mate, Pulla Sulla, he raised 350 million sesterces.
Damn.
So this is 40-odd years earlier. The triumvirs missed their revenue target by 200 million sesterces.
That's insane.
So that gives us a little bit of a perspective. We don't know what their target was, but we can make some guesses. Now, although many people in the last generation of the Republic had been able to enrich themselves through profits from, you know, proprietorships and legal work and trading across the empire, the really wealthy, the really, really Crassus Caesaruses were probably an exception. The norms of senatorial and equestrian wealth were probably much, much lower than what Crassus and Caesar had.
Right.
According to my source, probably in the region of between 2 million and 5 million sesterces would have been the wealth of most of these people.
Wow.
Which gives you some idea of the scale of what the triumvirs were trying to raise.
Yeah.
If they missed their target by 200 million, Jesus. How many people's wealth do you need to take? If the average wealth is, say, you know, 3 million and you're trying to raise two, well, you miss your target by 200 million, it's like an incredible amount of money.
Yeah.
Now, the money, as we said before, was raised to go to the soldiers. Now, check this out. Roman public finances in the past,
mm-hmm.
before the Civil War, before the triumvirs, had normally supported fewer than 100,000 troops in the field.
Right.
That's what the Romans had been used to doing.
Yeah, that's a big army.
For and that was in the budget. You know, yeah, we're going to cover about the costs of 100,000 troops.
Right.
And that would have cost about 90 million sesterces a year.
Right.
Now, this was a huge drain on the treasury of the Republic, but they managed to keep it going. But in 43 BCE, the revenues had to meet the wages of 193 legionaries in the triumviral armies alone.
Jeez.
So they've almost doubled the size of the army that they're trying to fund.
Right.
Which is about 173,700,000 sesterces per year, to which there are legions in Spain and Gaul,
mm-hmm.
that aren't in the triumvirs' armies that are in Rome.
Right.
Now, the normal wage requirements of the military would have more than doubled the expenses of the state. Octavian had also promised his troops 20,000 sesterces each, so they're bonuses. So this is over and above the normal salary requirements.
Yeah.
We assume that similar amounts were promised to Antony and Lepidus's armies to stop them from defecting to Octavian before the triumvirate. Yeah.
Pay and formed. Bonus, right.
And there are at least 43 legions in these three armies. So if you add all of that up, it suggests that they were trying to raise somewhere in the region of 3,870,000,000 sesterces.
So they came short, did they? They fell short?
43 times the normal military budget.
Damn. That is the exact opposite of where any empire's priority should be if they're looking at longevity. But because they kept raising the prices and the raising the bonuses of these men, because you had to so no one else outbid you, they've literally got to liquidate almost everything they can get their hands on to pay these guys so they don't turn away from them. The men with the swords are the true power in Rome once they're organized.
Yeah, and look, you know, we're very familiar with, you know, you and I have been talking a lot about the Cold War this morning, mm-hmm. and how this the arms race that happened between the US and the USSR during the Cold War forced the USSR to spend way more money on building up their armament capability instead of spending it on infrastructure and the people and education and healthcare and all that kind of stuff. Getting their local economy functioning in a more sustainable manner. The US, as we know, spends an insane amount of money on military and warfare. Your roads are crumbling, your healthcare's fucked, education system's fucked, you know, people are unemployed despite Obama's State of the Union address. You know, you've got a lot of problems in this country. And everyone's cutting back. We don't have money for this. We don't have money for that. But you spend, you know, trillions of dollars on fighting wars and buying new bombs and arming
and the military. Intelligence. Who knows how much the intelligence agencies are.
So, you know, this is a similar sort of situation. These guys have built this massive force. They need to be paid. Now, of course, a lot of the wealth for Rome in the last century or so has come out of the East.
Right.
It's come out of Egypt. It's come out of
Pompey certainly brought a lot back with him years ago. Yeah.
Sicily. It's come out of Africa. It's come out of Gaul. And now Brutus and Cassius's armies are in the East.
They're
so
raping it
Rome's not getting any money out of there. Right. Sextus Pompeius, Pompey the Great's eldest son, who's still alive, he's got control of Sicily, perhaps also Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to come up with a new way to raise cash. Yeah. Confiscating properties and selling it didn't
just
work.
Just not kind
of. So they had a fucking brilliant idea. What was their brilliant idea?
We're just going to raise taxes No problem. Everything will be taken care of. They're gonna base the taxes on property, which again, for those of you who know this, it's very un-Roman. I mean, that's the whole point of being rich and of being a nobleman or being a senator is that you don't get fucked with. And so the fact that they're raising taxes, and they know this is wrong, this goes against the grain of what it means to be a Roman, shows you how desperate they are. But I love the idea. So they put out an announcement that they're going to look at the estates of the 1,400 richest women of Rome. They're going to assess their property and pay a tax based on that assessment. And there's absolutely no precedent for this. Now, yes, during the time of the war against Hannibal, a lot of rich women would give up jewelry to try to pay for the war fund. But literally going out, assessing someone's value, taxing the hell out of them, and you're doing it to women. This is just literally brand new territory for this culture, this Roman culture, and it just strikes everybody the wrong way, and it shocks everyone, and this cannot stand. There's got to be some major kickback just for this idea alone.
And keeping in mind that women didn't get to vote.
Right.
Women didn't get, you know, any positions of power. So this was an extraordinary request. Now, the hero of this story is a woman called Hortensia.
Mm-hmm.
Who was obviously a kick-ass chick. She leads a group of wealthy women.
Come on, ladies!
They first go to the female relatives of the triumvirs.
Smart, that's smart.
And then they go into the forum to directly confront the triumvirs.
Yeah.
Now, Hortensia was the daughter of the consul and advocate Quintus Hortensius Hortalus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're a listener to the old Julius Caesar series, you may think the name Hortensius sounds familiar.
Because it does.
That is the guy who convinced Cato to let him marry his wife. Cato had been married to his wife, Marcia, for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that Caesar wrote about in his anti-Cato tract after Cato died. You know, and Hortensius comes to Cato one day and goes, "Your wife, Marcia, I've always had a thing for her.
Yeah.
How about you let me marry her?" And Cato goes, "Sure.
Yeah.
I'm a Stoic. You can marry her.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not going to give in to my love for her.
Yeah. You go right Look, ahead. I love her. She's my wife. She's born me married many children.
Yeah.
But if you want her, she's yours.
Go right ahead.
So Cato divorces Marcia.
Fucked up.
Marcia. She marries Hortensius.
Yes.
Bears him a son.
Aw.
He then, Hortensius that is, dies.
Right.
And she, Marcia, inherits his entire estate.
Right.
And then remarries Cato, who gets Hortensius' entire estate.
So let me ask you a quick question. Chrissy divorces you. She marries Murdoch. He dies. She comes back to you. Do you forgive her?
Oh, I would be sending her on a ride. No, I'd be like, yeah, go do that. Go.
It was your plan.
Yeah, it'd be my plan.
Honey, I got a plan.
Look, it's just sex.
All you got to do is
just sex. Yeah. What's the difference, I always say, between shaking somebody's hand and fucking them? I mean, it's just flesh touching flesh.
Right.
Well, let's not be prudish about it.
Well.
What's the difference, really?
What do you think about when you shook my hand for the first time?
It was a thrilling event. I had to reach down. That's quite a long way. But literally, what is the difference between shaking someone's hand and having sex with them?
Do I have to look them in the eye? I can have sex. I don't want to look them in the eye and they're not allowed to kiss me if I don't like them. I'm sorry. I'll do it, but don't look me in the eye.
It's very uncomfortable, Ray and I sitting like inches away from each other, looking into each other's eyes, talking
deeply
about
deeply into each other's
having
eyes.
Having sex.
Exactly. A little aroused. But I hung over, so forget it.
So so Hortensia is Hortensius's daughter from a previous marriage.
Right.
So, according to Appian, this is the speech that she gives in the forum in front of the triumvirs who are killing people just for looking at them askew. Why should we pay taxes when we have no part in the honours, the commands, the statecraft for which you contend against each other with such harmful results? Because this is a time of war, do you say?
When have there not been wars? And when have taxes ever been imposed on women, who are exempted by their sex among all mankind? Our mothers, once for all, rose superior to their sex and made contributions when you were in danger of losing the whole empire and the city itself through the conflict with the Carthaginians. But then they contributed voluntarily, not from their landed property, their fields, their dowries, or their houses, without which life is not possible to free women, but only from their own jewellery, and not according to fixed valuation, not under fear of informers or accusers, not by force and violence, but what they themselves were willing to give. Who now causes you alarm for your empire or the country? Let war with the Gauls or the Parthians come, and we shall not be inferior to our mothers in zeal for the common safety. But for civil wars may we never contribute, nor ever assist you against each other. We didn't contribute to Caesar or to Pompey. Neither Marius nor Cinna imposed taxes upon us, nor did Sulla, who held despotic power in the state. Do you, whereas you say that you are re-establishing the Commonwealth? When Hortensia had thus spoken, the triumvirs were angry that women should dare to hold a public meeting when the men were silent, that they should demand from magistrates the reasons for their acts and not furnish money while the men were serving in the army. They ordered the lictors to drive them away from the tribunal, which they proceeded to do until the cries were raised by the multitude outside. When the lictors desisted, and the triumvirs said they would postpone till the next day the consideration of the matter. On the following day, they reduced the number of women who were to present a valuation of their property from 1,400 to 400, and decreed that all men who possessed more than 100,000 drachmas, both citizens and strangers, freedmen and priests, and men of all nationalities without a single exception, should, under the same dread of penalty and also of informers, lend them at interest a 50th part of their property and contribute 1 year's income to the war expenses. The balls on this woman.
Yes.
Like, yes. We haven't read a lot in these shows about right. women standing up doing... Sevilla's done some stuff. And right. Caesar's mother got him a reprieve from Sulla and right. that kind of stuff. But we haven't seen many yeah. tales of women yet. And this one really... They make a big deal out of the history. She obviously had massive, big fucking yeah. titties.
They did it in public. And they're talking to the men who have absolute power in Rome, literally life and death over everyone. And they just went, no, 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 this is something that you do not do. If we don't have rights, you don't get our money. It's as simple as that. And it worked. I mean, they went from 1,400 to 400, so not bad. But, of course, like you said, they started increasing the taxes on other men. They started taking, half of the agricultural yield of the farmers. Certain towns in Italy had to give free housing to soldiers during the winter so the state didn't have to pay for it. So they were doing everything they could to make sure that everybody else paid for their troops except for them.
Now, Hortensia is also believed to have married to her second cousin, Quintus Servilius Capio, son of Quintus Servilius Capio the Younger and brother of Cato Uticensis and Servilia Capionis. So that's Cato, who right. married off his wife.
Right.
And Servilia, his half-sister, Caesar's mistress, mother of Brutus.
Right.
And Hortensia was married into that family. Mm. Now, she had a daughter, Servilia, who married another conservative senator. Her husband, Servilia's husband, adopted his sister's son, Marcus Junius Brutus, before his death. Gotcha. So technically, and that's A2 Brute for people right. who can't remember the Brutuses and yeah. the Brutuses. So technically, Brutus was Quintus Servilius Capio Junianus by adoption, although he later repudiated the name. Right. So Hortensia is connected through marriage to Cato, Servilia, and, Marcus Brutus.
So she comes from a line of strong women, influential people. So, yeah, she probably didn't have any trouble marching up to them in the forum and verbally bitch-slapping them about this highly irregular enterprise that they wanted to undertake.
Now, things start to get tricky and sticky here in Vegas, that is. No.
No. So, they were sticky, but we wiped them up, Tim, I promise.
Half of the yield that the triumvirs were looking to take now was going to come from farms.
Yeah.
Now, this is a complex situation. Now, you know, a lot of the real estate that were being assigned to the soldiers were coming from the Italian farming communities.
Right.
Now, these Italian communities had to provide traditionally free winter billets for the soldiers, which, you know, was something typically only the provinces had had to face previously.
Right.
Now the Italian communities are having to, you know, have deal soldiers living in their houses and feed them and clothe them and all that kind of stuff.
Keep their daughters away from them, yeah.
Ronald Syme, in his classic book on the end of the Republic, sums it up. The foundations of the new order were cemented with the blood of citizens and buttressed with a despotism that made men recall the dictatorship of Caesar as an age of gold. The Republic had been abolished. Whatever the outcome of the armed struggle, it could never be restored. Despotism ruled, supported by violence and confiscation. The best men were dead or proscribed. The Senate was packed with ruffians. The consulate, once the reward of civic virtue, now became the recompense of craft or crime.
I like that.
So the Italian communities are being forced to give up their land, not just as billets now, but to give up their land literally to soldiers. So these Italian people who are have been sort of part of Rome since
No matter what rights they've had, they have been part of the fabric of their society. And when they had to give up the house to whatever soldier, I mean, we're talking the house, the farm, the tools, the animals. It's not like they could pack everything up of value and leave. It all had to stay and, you know, belong to this new owner. They are literally breaking the back of their own society, their food providers, and they can't, like you said, they can't get food from North Africa. And so it's just this pathetic negative spiral that's just going to get worse. I don't know how they expected this to work out, but again, they are just obsessed with placating their troops because, again, that's their power base. And if you don't pay them, somebody else will.
So one more thought about money. The annual salary of a legionary was about 900 sesterces, from which he was expected to meet his basic expenses. The bonuses that these guys were all promised, 20,000 sesterces, was considerably more than a soldier might expect to earn over a long military career. He's getting it in one lump sum.
That's crazy.
Furthermore, the bonus was free from deductions. See, normally a Roman legionary would have to fund his own food, equipment, and the other basic goods that you needed to be a legionary would come out of the money that you were paid.
That makes sense.
But now there's 20,000 they didn't, because they're retiring. They're retiring and getting 20,000 sesterces. Now, if we assume that the average soldier at this point in Rome's history is drawn from the less wealthy echelons of Roman society, all of a sudden getting 20 years worth of pay in one lump sum is going to considerably and dramatically transform their social status.
Yes.
You know, it's like if you earn 100 grand a year and all of a sudden you get 20 times that, 10 times that would be a million plus two million.
Yeah.
Be like getting $2 million in a lump sum. You're used to earning 100 grand, having to cover all your expenses. All of a sudden you're giving $2 million.
You're right.
You know, you can do some shit.
Yeah.
So, you know, the soldiers now are making bang, and it's all of the a lot of the wealthy senators and equestrians have been killed or exiled. All of a sudden, you've got a shitload of soldiers.
Right,
43 legions times 4,500.
Yeah, and suddenly they've all got a bunch of money. A
couple of hundred thousand guys,
right,
that are effectively millionaires overnight. Millionaires.
Yeah, it's been taken from the people. Yeah.
Now, also on top of that, there are these massive rewards being paid to people who go out and hunt down the prescribed.
Right.
You know, you get big cash lump sum plus a percentage of the property of the person that you kill. And a lot of these gangs of killers were soldiers who were saying, hey, well, you know, I've got nothing to do now. I'll go find these guys. I know how to chop off a head.
Yeah.
Now, the rewards, like 100,000 sesterces, was the level of the census requirement for the primary class, the prima classis of Roman society. Mm. So technically, if you killed somebody on the prescription list and got the reward, you were immediately elevated into the upper echelons of Roman society.
Wow.
Now, keeping in mind, sometimes there were gangs of these killers and they'd have to share the money around. Yeah, but
you kill a couple of people.
If you're one guy, you find somebody on the prescription list, you kill them, you're automatically elevated into, you know, you get the white...
Social strata.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's insane.
You get to go to the club, the country club. You know, you're part of the inner circle now.
Yeah, that's insane. Now,
this is an amazing... economic redistribution of money and power that happened overnight almost in Rome.
Yeah.
It's something I think that, you know, we don't often think about the impact of that. And a lot, I think, as we'll see going on, a lot of the reasons why Octavian survived and had the peace that he did for as long as he did.
Mm-hmm.
Has to do with the fact that all of the old elite are gone by the time he comes to power, and all the nouveau homus, the new rich guys, are all ex-soldiers, who are rich because of Octavian.
That's right.
So whatever you want to do, boss. Yeah.
Right.
You're the man, that's man. Right.
Because of you, I am where I'm at. Yeah. I would like to say that the nouveau riche, when they do go to the country club, will not know which forks and spoons to use. But besides that, because, you know, they're not cultured. But, they're the new top 1%, whatever you want to call it. And they owe their allegiance. They owe everything they have to one of the triumvirates. Because everybody was loyal to the person that was paying them. And no one else, which is more... adds to more complications as we go on in the story. Everybody knows is who signs their check. They don't give a shit about anybody else.
So that's a really big deal. It's worth keeping in mind. But let's think about the bill. So we've talked about the bonuses and everything they needed to pay out to the military.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, there are an estimated 2,300 names on the prescription list.
Right.
With a kill price of 100,000 sesterces per... So the bill for the prescriptions alone is 230 million sesterces.
Right.
Keep in mind, Sulla, 40 years previously, raised 350 million in total from his prescriptions.
Damn.
So if we add all of that together, the total bill in 43 and 42 is something in excess of 4 billion sesterces. And if the average senatorial wealth was something like 1 million sesterces, that's something like the equivalent of 4,000 senatorial fortunes is what the triumvirs are trying to raise to cover the prescriptions and their bonuses and pay to the military. It's an insane amount of money. Now, if we assume that this money was then distributed across the soldiers of the triumviral armies, which is probably, as we said before, about 200,000 men.
Right.
And if we count in the women and children likely associated with those men, something like 700,000 Romans out of a total free population estimated in that year of just over 4 million were the beneficiaries of the prescriptions. So 700,000 out of 4 million free people, nearly a quarter, maybe a fifth, five, seven, somewhere between a fifth and a quarter
of the entire population of Rome became rich overnight.
That is truly the 99% taking from the 1%. Oh, my God. And you know these people, they're not going out and buying nice things, I mean, or furniture or whatever. I mean, these are young guys who have suddenly got a lot of cash. I'm sure the hooker industry and all the taverns and the bars did really well for the next couple of years because they're not used to having this kind of money. They're not used to being disciplined. They probably just went out and spent it like crazy.
So, you know, we've talked a lot about the horrors and the bloodshed and the executions and all that kind of stuff, but that's one side of the story. The other side of the story, a lot of people made out really well from what the triumvirs did. Fifth to a quarter of the population became millionaires overnight.
Yeah.
And in a way, you can think about what the triumvirs were doing as buying mass political support, like Caesar had done when he was borrowing money from Crassus, etc. So, you know, it is probably the most extensive redistribution of wealth in Roman history. The triumvirs built a class of relatively wealthy, powerful individuals who could be relied upon in the coming years to support the regime and who were themselves tainted by the spilling of blood because they're either soldiers or they've gone out and cut off someone's head.
Yeah.
So they're not going to be squeamish about having to kill people to get money.
That's how they got there.
This was a massive storehouse of political loyalty for the triumvirs. And we need to keep in mind that these people and the families that were created didn't just disappear into obscurity over the next few generations. You know, you can track a lot of what happens in Rome over the next 100, 200, 300 years from the new elite that was created with the blood of the proscriptions. And I think that's where we can leave it.
I think that's where we either
because we're both nearly asleep.
We're going to fall into our keyboard.
We're losing our voices.
Yeah.
So that's the end of episode 12, I think. Probably the last show we will do, apart from maybe some videos, live from Las Vegas.
Yes.
I do want to thank – let's talk about all the guys that have been here. So – Let me whip this out.
Yeah.
So we want to thank in no particular order, but Ryan Markley.
Yes, thank you.
Ryan is shooting the video here. Now Ryan is an incredible guy.
Yes, he is.
He came to Vegas to hang out with us and shoot video.
Mm-hmm.
Straight from producing the Golden Globes.
Amazing.
He told us that when he leaves here, he's going to Sylvester Stallone's house to shoot something for Stallone.
Well, I'm doing that too. So.
Then he's the head engineer for a production company. He's doing the Oscars, you know, the Academy Awards. He does, I think, the Emmys or the Grammys or something like that.
Hell of a nice guy.
Hell of a nice guy. Very, very talented chap.
Yeah.
We had Thomas J. Mokay, Brit,
yeah.
who came here to hang out with us. Lovely guy.
He had a flaw.
He's a Brit.
Well, two flaws. The whole Wellington.
And he's a fan of Wellington, which
reminded Jaden Mark.
So he came in from, I can't remember where he came in from.
North Carolina.
Yes. No, yeah. Charlotte, wasn't it?
Charlotte, North Carolina.
Charlotte, yeah.
Yeah.
Came in to hang out with us. We had John Hayes, who was here for the first couple of days. John runs an IT business. Lovely guy. Took us out to dinner last night.
Great food.
Dave Ferguson. The stoner Jack Black dude from San Francisco who came in, had a great couple of days.
Oh, God.
Like, Dave has traveled the world, done amazing things, works at Trader Joe's.
Yeah.
Totally cool, like classic stoner dude. Just a lot of fun. We had a great time with Dave.
Just a quick story on him. The favorite thing, he just said some crazy things, but we were at the table last night, and the waitress goes, "Excuse me, sir, would you like another glass of champagne?" He goes, "Yeah, I could throw it back." she figured out that meant yes. It took her a couple minutes. So.
Tim Henning, of course.
Yes.
We're in Tim's suite at the Marriott right now recording because it's quieter than ours. Yes. Lovely guy. He's just, you know, put us up here, let us take over his suite. Lovely chap. We had Stephen Bustamante who came in.
Yes,
he disappeared
nice
last
guy.
Night. I don't know what happened to Steve.
I don't know. Hopefully we didn't scare him away. Hell of a nice guy. I enjoyed talking to him.
Who are we missing? Who are we forgetting? Good feeling. We're missing some people. Of course, Tony Kynaston arrived yesterday from Toronto with Sir J. David Markham. Mm-hmm. Oh, Glenn Beardsley came and had drinks with us last night.
Yes.
Glenn is a local, lives in Vegas. He's a Brit who's been here 10 years. He actually works behind the scenes at the Cirque du Soleil Love show, the bitter show. Gave us free tickets.
Yes,
we're going
to that
tomorrow night. Mwah. So generous. Like, they're expensive fucking tickets.
Yes, yes. You probably stole them. But anyway, thank you.
Handed those over. It's lovely. My old mate Wayne Turmel, a podcaster, did shows with me 10 years ago. He came by last night for drinks.
I like his hat.
Yeah, he's dressed like Indiana Jones.
Yeah. I look for the whip on his head.
I think that's everybody. Of course, your family, my family.
Right.
It's just been...
And there might be a future marriage and alliance between our...
Scott and Kiki.
Yeah.
She's only, what, 10 years older
than him?
She's
10,
he's
fine.
Yeah. She's 10?
She's 10.
Oh, so she's only, like, really 8 years older than him. I'm 9 years older than Chrissy.
See?
So
no problem.
That's no problem.
I have no problem with that.
So thank you to everybody who came to Vegas. We've had a great time. We've still got another couple of days to go, but it's been a hoot. And I hope we get to do something like this every year. We all come together and meet. You and I can sit down, have a few drinks. All the fans can come in. I think you'll find when you'll hear from these guys on Facebook over the next few days that they had a great time.
Had a blast. That's what they told us.
They said, you're not cunts after all in real life.
Well, they said we're not as cunty as they thought we would be. So I was impressed. Thank you.
They've just been a really, really stellar bunch of guys.
Classic,
really, really good fun.
Yep.
Just good fun guys.
Yeah. When I go home, I hope they detox just like we do. But anyway, it was a blast meeting all of them.
I hope I haven't forgotten anybody.
I don't think so.
If I have forgotten you,
terribly sorry.
Let me look at the list. Vegas. I think that's everybody. All right. Well, that's that, and we'll be back. So assuming we get out of here alive,
exactly.
We'll be back soon. Cheers.
Take care, everybody.